Welcome to the Hannah Miller Show. And here she is, Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, and this is what happened this week. And I have with me my lovely mother, Carlotta Jackson.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be with you, Hannah.
If this isn't one of the first interviews you and I've done, we've not done a whole lot. No, it's mostly been Dad and I. So it's been it's been a while since you and I have done one.
Yep.
So we decided it was time. We needed to get back on the microphones together. And you happened to have read a book recently that really kind of captured your imagination, and you have referenced it a couple of times in some recent speeches that you've given. And so we decided, you know what? Let's do a full interview about this. So before we dive into it, though, I just wanted to give a shout out to one of my listeners. His name is Randy. He purchased one or two of my dad's books after I recently interviewed my dad about his latest book. And Randy ended up communicating a little bit with my mom over the purchase of the book. And he's been a longtime listener.
Listener of Hannah. I thought maybe he had met Robert at a Constitution Party meeting that Robert spoke at, but he actually heard Hannah's interview.
And he used to listen when I was on the radio, and then he followed me over from the radio to my podcast and has continued to listen. And I just want to give Randy a shout out because I appreciate that. That's a lot of years of faithfulness and being a listener, and I don't get to encounter and hear about a lot of those folks. I just want to say thank you, Randy, for purchasing a book, and thank you most especially for just being a longtime listener. I appreciate that, and following me over from the radio to my podcast. And the other thing I just remembered was that I wanted to mention, before we get into this, actually, Mom, I said in the very first minute or two that Mom has talked about this book in recent speeches. If you did not know, my mom does a lot of speaking as well at events, does a lot of speaking about homeschooling, parenting, marriage, faithfulness of the Lord, all of the above, and does a fantastic job too. So I know that Dad and I do a lot of the podcasting and talking around here, but just so you know, my mom does a lot of this too and is a captivating speaker as well, and has just some amazing stories of God's faithfulness to share in regards to marriage and parenting and homeschooling and really a wide variety. So I want to remind our listeners of that as we delve into this topic. That, hey, if you've got an event coming up or you think of something and you're just like, wow, I'd really like to hear more from Carlotta, just reach out, email, or if, you know, you can Facebook message me or reach out on jacksonfamilyministry.com or our Facebook page. All of those are great ways to contact us, and not just about Dad speaking or myself, but Mom as well. And you won't be disappointed if you do. All right. So that was the last order of podcast business. Let's get down to the interview. So I've heard you talking about this book and all this suspense. People are like, what book are they talking about? Because I've referenced this a few times already. Tell us a little bit about this book that you've read, just the title, the author. Let's go from there.
Well, the title of the book is called The Invincible Family, and the author is Kimberly Ells. It's not a faith-based book, but some would say it's a fact-based book and just plain common sense. And I kind of like the fact that it's not faith-based because it maybe will appeal to people who are not Christians. Mm-hmm. They don't have any kind of faith. And she often makes statements like this in her book: if there is a God or if there is an evolutionary universe, the result has been the same. If you Google the author, Kimberly Ells, and the organization Family Watch International, for whom she is a policy advisor, you will find that she and the co-founder of Family Watch are Mormon. We would not agree on doctrinal statements, but I don't know that I would disagree with anything that I read in the book. She has represented Family Watch as a speaker at the United Nations, and she's worked to prevent early sexualization of children and to promote the family as the fundamental unit of society. And, of course, I don't think I have to tell too many of y'all that I believe in the family.
Yeah.
Of course, we are the parents of 9 children. And I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, at the time of a sexual revolution and a wave of feminism. And I remember thinking that, I don't remember thinking too much about being a mom. I wanted to be a nurse. But in my heart, I knew that I wanted to be married and have children. My father was a pastor, and my pastor dad used to say this a lot, but I don't think I hear it very much anymore except outside of my home, and maybe it's a message that's hinted at a sermon occasionally on Mother's Day, but it is the title of a poem that was written in 1865 by William Wallace under the title, it was originally written under the title of What Rules the World, and now it is entitled The Hand That Rocks the Cradle Rules the World. And so this book really is about the mom and about women and our role in the world today. And, you know, I don't, even in the 60s and the 70s, I don't remember thinking, oh, I wanted to be just like the man. I wanted to do the things that men do. I think as a Christian early on in my life, that I was appreciative of the person that God made me to be. And I think that we are missing that element in our culture today, a gratefulness for who God has made us and realizing that we are who we are.
Well, I think that's very evident with the transgender movement that's happened. And I don't know if we're going to get into that, if you're going to talk about some of that.
It's in the book a little bit, actually a good bit towards the end of the book. And the whole time this transgender stuff has been happening in our country, I have thought there's a lack of gratefulness and a lack of course, Christian faith that recognizes that we are the people that God made us to be, and He created us male and female. So I heard about the book in the New American Magazine. I saw it, and I ordered it. I wanted to make some comments about the family and my own beliefs. We as Christians need to be reminded that God created marriage and the family in Genesis 1 and 2. And our physical bodies present evidence of how the union between a man and woman occurs in order to procreate. It's just plain common sense. And all is good with the man and woman fulfilling their different but equally important roles in their union until Genesis chapter 3, when Satan tempted Adam and Eve. And we've been under the curse ever since. Part of that curse was and still is the struggle between man and woman, where the woman wants to rule over her husband and where the husband wants to dominate. Our struggle as Christians is for the man to love his wife as Christ loved the church, which I think of as being one of gentleness and considerate leadership and a life-giving sacrificial service. And for the wife to gladly, and I'm going to use the word.
The dirty word?
The dirty word. Submit to her husband's leadership and come alongside him in life's journey as a helpmate. It's obvious to me that Satan continues to try to destroy the family. We as Christians need to recognize this and be about evangelism and discipleship.
Before we go further, can you define the family for the purposes of this podcast?
Yes.
For our listeners.
So when I talk about the family in this podcast, I am talking about a male and a female united in marriage and their children. It is sad that I even have to clarify what I mean by family, but words have new meanings these days. I mean, I thought about the word mouse. I remember when I first learned in the computer world that a mouse was something other than a rodent. I said, what is a mouse?
But you said this was not a faith-based book. So, Miss Ells, and that's E-L-L-S for
yes.
our listeners. I meant to say that earlier.
Yep.
E-L-L-S. She did not talk about Satan as the enemy of the family. Who or what does she describe as destructive forces against the family?
Well, first of all, I want the listeners to know that I do quote her a lot. I'm going to quote her a lot during this podcast. So a lot of what I say won't be my own words. Mm-hmm. I have written down some things here that I want to be sure that I make clear, I can't explain it any better than her, so I'm going to let her do it. Mm-hmm. But according to Miss Ells, these forces, which I believe Satan is using, mm-hmm. include socialists who believe the family inhibits the progressive state, radical feminists who believe the family prevents a woman's independence and equality, and sexual radicalism, which promotes LGBTQABCDE. Mm-hmm. All of which hope to unseat the woman and her family in the name of equality. These forces are represented all the way to the United Nations and are working to destroy the sanctity of the family worldwide.
So the book is divided into five parts. And so just to kind of keep things organized, let's talk about part one. Let's just start there. And let's talk about part one, the woman and the man.
Yeah, I think she does do some overlapping in her parts, but it is divided into five parts. So she begins this section by discussion of belonging. To whom do children belong? As a Christian, I believe I belong to God. But let's set aside that important truth for the moment. Miss Ailes is the mother of five, and I'm the mother of nine children. When I delivered my children, an umbilical cord still connected each child to me, and no one in the delivery room questioned for a moment that each child belonged to me, and I belonged to each child. Even after the cord was cut and I held a child against my chest, our connection was inseparable. This is how it always happens. No one is born without being tethered to a specific person, and that specific person is always
a woman.
Yes, this relationship has been recognized for all of time, and taking a mother's baby from her is a crime. Since men do not have umbilical cords, physically connecting them to their children at birth, marriage has historically been the mechanism by which fathers claim their children. Now today, there's a genetic testing, of course, to determine who the father is, but that's only a recent phenomenon. Biological connections cannot be dissolved. They can't be signed away. They can be signed away, but they cannot be undone. These connections can be signed away is what I meant, but they cannot be undone. Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't mean that I own my children. They're not my property and that I can sell or buy children, but they do belong to me and their father to help them grow into responsible adults. For me, I want them also to be followers of Christ. And then ultimately, they belong to themselves and, of course, hopefully to the Lord. This belonging remains key to the ordering functioning of society, and any alteration or challenge to this anatomical sovereignty of mothers and fathers will be politically, economically, and socially catastrophic.
Okay, I'm tracking right with you. I understand this. It makes a lot of sense to me. You kind of threw out the word common sense right in the beginning when we started talking about this.
Yep.
Yeah, all that seems to be very much common sense to me. So what is the problem and the point of this part one that she gets into?
Well, this belonging, the belonging of the child to the mother and the mother to the child, is an idea that, of course, is being challenged and has been subtly challenged for decades. And I think that's why I want people to read the book, because I want them to be aware that these challenges have been subtle and they have brought us to where we are now in the transgender LGBTQ thinking. So I'll ask you this question. Who wants the minds and hearts of our children?
Are you talking about the good or the bad?
The bad.
The bad, okay. I was gonna say, ultimately, the Lord wants the mind and hearts of our children, but when you're talking about the other end, it would be Lucifer. Satan, I believe, wants the mind of our children, but he uses various means in the world today with which to capture their minds.
Yes, and they do want our children, the governments. Mm-hmm. The world wants our children. Satan wants our children. And I'm going to turn in her book and just read some quotes to our audience. Aristotle, who was a philosopher before Christ, "All who have meditated on the art of governing mankind are convinced that the fate of empires depends on the education of youth." Mao Zedong, the first leader of communist China, said, "The young people are the most vital force in society." Confucius, "If your plan is for 1 year, plant rice. If your plan is for 10 years, plant trees. If your plan is for 100 years, educate children." Sir Herbert Reed, an English art historian and philosopher, said, "Great changes in the destiny of mankind can be effected only in the minds of little children." And then Vladimir Lenin, "Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted." And then Adolf Hitler, "He alone who owns the youth gains the future." And this is a quote, I don't remember who said it. Nurturing the young in their very first life lessons is the goal of every savvy social reformer, politician, activist, and revolutionary. I think that's Miss Ailes' quote. Therefore, what must these savvy social reformers, politicians, and activists, revolutionaries do? They must unseat the mother. Throughout the ages, mothers have in large part remained the first possessors of the young, and we have gained and maintained the allegiance of our young. You still love me, don't you?
I do. I do, and I think in all my other readings and experience with culture, I see that no matter, it is very difficult for that to be severed, no matter the sins of the mother sometimes.
It is.
Sometimes you're just baffled by a child who is a grown adult who's been hurt over and over by a parent, but specifically a mother, but will return to them over and over again, desperate for that connection and that, and it's heart-wrenching.
That's
and
right.
It's heartbreaking. And this is, I actually mentioned this a little bit on my podcast last week in talking about homeschooling and why I thought that the government was going to come after homeschooling was for this very reason, because more and more parents are taking back their children and the government does not like it.
Well, I do think,
and I know that's a whole different bent here, but
yes, I think that the last couple of years have taught us a few things and have opened some eyes, and I'm praying that parents have realized what is happening and subtle education that has been taking place. But who taught your children their first life lessons? Who taught my children their first life lessons?
You did.
That's right. You, the mom.
Whether you homeschool or not.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about who held their little hands and helped them walk.
That's right.
You know, who held them in their lap and helped them learn to hold their head.
That's right.
Those very first things is the mother.
That's right. We teach our children their first life lessons, you and I, moms. So, Hitler could have said, she alone who owns the youth gains the future. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And another quote, and this is why a global army is hunting the woman, eager to strip her of the precious living cargo she carries. And again, what put us in this role? Our bodies. As designed by God, our bodies gave us the young. They literally land in our laps, don't they? The woman does not have to conquer anyone. We don't have to launch any initiatives. We don't have to raise anyone's taxes, implement any programs, or start a revolution to commandeer the young. They already belong to the woman, the mother. Mm-hmm. And despite the socialists, the rulers and governments, and the radical feminists, we remain stubbornly in their way. Mothers keep thinking their babies belong to them and keep teaching them whatever they want. And this belonging, this possessorship, fosters in me responsibility, action, and stewardship. It helped me grow up when I became
right.
a mom.
That's
and
right.
it is, and Vody Balcom, that's why I love a statement that Vody Balcom says. He believes in early marriage, early parenthood, because it helps us grow up and become responsible
yeah.
adults.
I mean, as a counselor, I see that all the time. You know, the world says, don't, you know, go travel, enjoy, don't get married, don't have children, don't do those things young. And I get it, but at
sure.
the same time, I see some people who they do get married and they have children young, and it just does so much to grow them as young people. And you really learn to die to self and to die to that sin nature. A lot of your sin is exposed.
And yet, when you hear somebody marrying so young, does it strike you as being a negative?
And,
in some ways, do you think that the world sees that
oh, yeah.
as being a negative? Oh,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. They discourage it. They discourage the getting married young. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and get married at 16.
No.
But, you know, even now, younger than 30, people are starting to frown on it. And, you know, it's just astounding to me, because I think it is one of the things that the Lord uses the most in our lives to make us more like Him and to make us more like Jesus, marriage and having children. Anyway, that's been very true in my life.
It's been true in my life. 9 little sharp edges rubbing up against me have refined me a little bit. A German novelist by the name of Jean Paul, observed, "The conscience of children is formed by the influences that surround them. Their notions of good and evil are the result of the moral atmosphere they breathe. For new human beings, this atmosphere has historically been supplied by their families and principally by their mothers. A mother powerfully impresses on her child what is right and wrong, what is true and untrue, what is noble and detestable, and thus establishes the foundational beliefs of societies, nations, and the world, one child at a time." We are entrusted with virtually unlimited power. And, you know, I think that's what struck me about the book. I don't think I realized what power was in my hand.
Yeah, I'm getting inspired.
I know.
I'm just like, yes, yes, I am mother. Hear me roar.
I know. Exactly. And I don't think women realize what is in their hands.
Well, the world has twisted it. You know, we look at motherhood and, I'm just a mom.
Yes.
I'm just a stay-at-home mom. I'm just a, you know, and that's the language that we use about it. But this hearing, you know, you just even talking about it, I feel the stirrings in my bosom of the challenge, the inspiration, the motivation to be better than I am.
I think that's what I felt when I first read the book. I thought, wow, I don't even think I realized what power was in my hands. I just wanted to raise my children to love the Lord and have the privilege of homeschooling them. But I don't think I realized that I had power. Mm-hmm. And my children were very helpless in my hands. Yeah. And remarkably, most women wield this power nobly and frequently at great sacrifice to ourselves. I mean, I wasn't a member of a garden club, and I didn't go play tennis. I homeschooled my kids for 30 years. Mm-hmm. There are horrible mothers, but they are the exception and not the rule. The vast majority, imperfect as we are, love our children, and we do our best to raise them, and we would give up anything for them. There's a reason that mother's love is universally recognized as the gold standard of devotion.
There was something that recently went viral on the internet, and it was, you know, this video of, there was a question asked, and anyway, that the comments were just flooded, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of women, you know, basically go into battle for their kids and indicating their willingness to.
Yes.
And you saw women from across the religious, political, cultural, social, national spectrum watching this video, disregarding what it said, and just shaking their heads and going, this is insanity, and saying, you know, I will fight for my kids.
Well, I think we've seen that more as men have been playing in women's sports, dressed mm-hmm. as women. As men have been allowed into women's bathrooms. And by the way, did you see where in Loudoun, Virginia, that entire school board is gone?
Oh, really? The last I'd seen was a bunch of the students had a huge walkout and over their bathroom policy.
They either didn't run for office or they were defeated.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Good for them.
Yes. That was mm-hmm. That was where the young lady was. No, I think I'm mixing up my stories.
Mm-hmm. There was some things that happened, though, in that school. It was bathroom policies, locker room policies, and safety. The safety of the female students was totally disregarded.
Yes.
I believe that's where the Daily Wire employee went down and did a big expose in Loudoun. And it was that's where all of that happened, if I'm remembering correctly. So, yes, and that whole thing is now, that was it was exposed, and as you just said, the school board was ousted in one way or another.
Yeah. As the author of the book said several times, we've been put into this position of influence by virtue of our anatomy. And think about this. Even all men are carried inside of women, born of women, nursed by women, taught first by women, and it is to a woman that a man must return to exercise the power of procreation. The natural, and I would say God-given, sovereignty of women is significant. So, Ailes asked this question, and this is significant. If the motherhood of women over the population of the world is both supremely influential and virtually indestructible, how do you get rid of it? How do we get rid of motherhood? How do we get rid of this power? the woman must be unseated. She must be removed from the seat that she holds. And how is that? By either throwing her out of her seat or getting her to step down voluntarily. Now, we don't use that term, unseat the woman. It wouldn't be very popular, would we? Would it? We use words like, we're going to free the woman, mm-hmm. or we're going to empower the woman. And we see that about every other day on Facebook, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very true. You know, the getting out in the workplace, becoming a girl boss, doing all these things is what we connotate with empowerment, and that's what frees us from the chains of child rearing and homemaking.
That reminds me, I actually wanted to start this by saying that I said something about it, but I am so thankful God made me a woman. I enjoyed being a mom and still enjoy being a mom and a grandmother, and thankful for, there have been times when I've, of course, read about what feminists want to do, and I say, hey, don't rain on my parade. I got it good over here.
Yeah, I know. I'm enjoying this stay-at-home wife life. That's what I say. I'm like, y'all don't be ruining it for me. I don't want to be going to a 9-to-5. I really wish Dolly had sung 10-to-3. Let's be honest.
That's,
you know,
that's right.
And but yes, I love being a homemaker and raising my children, and you know, all these women out there always talking about, trying to work for some other man, usually.
That's right.
And out in an office atmosphere. And I'm like, no, you know, I actually enjoy my slow mornings, enjoying my cup of coffee or hot chocolate or whatever. But anyway, so yes, I'm right there with you. So what are the tactics to unseat the woman?
So these tactics are found in part 2 and 3 of Elle's book.
Okay. Well, before we do that, I think we've gone 30 minutes this week. So we'll do this as two parts. And we will have, this will run this week. And then you guys can look for the second part for Thanksgiving weekend and enjoy that then. And, but hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving, and we look forward to connecting with you after that time.
Yes. God bless you as you enjoy your families over Thanksgiving.
Thank you for listening to The Hannah Miller Show. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast. This podcast is produced by Bob Sloan Audio Productions. If you'd like to find out more about Hannah or to schedule her for a speaking event, go to her website, thehannahmillershow.com.